Welcome. I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. On today's show, we are celebrating the return of the arts to the San Francisco Bay Area. But before we have that discussion, we're going to check in with one of the five young climate activists who began a hunger strike outside of the White House yesterday. Joining us now is Emma Govia, an 18-year-old climate activist from Santa Rosa, California. She says she's going on hunger strike because she's terrified about what the climate crisis is doing and will do to the people and places she loves. This summer, Emma marched hundreds of miles across California to demand action that meets the scale of the climate crisis. Hi, Emma. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you. You are outside of the White House. You and four others started a hunger strike yesterday.
Yes, correct.
Why did you decide to do this, Emma?
We were called to action because, well, for me, it's because I've lived my whole life in a constant state of crisis, in a constant state of fires, and watching my county burn over and over, and worrying about the climate crisis, and also assuming that politicians would be responsible and do everything in their power and be leaders and act like adults and act responsibly. But then knowing that politicians have failed us, and it's kind of been all talk and no action. And right now, the politicians are failing us. Joe Biden made really big promises to our movement and to young people, to a whole generation, and right now he's folding on his promises. So that's what called us to action. That's what called me to action, that we are standing up and deciding to be leaders in this moment, when in calling Joe Biden to be a leader too, because we know that he wants to, and we know that he doesn't want to go to COP empty-handed. So we were really driven to do this high sacrifice action, to go on hunger strike and only water fast for as long as it takes for him to keep his promises and pass this bill, this $3.5 trillion package he promised us, that the full climate in the reconciliation bill. So we're going on hunger strike until Joe Biden keeps his promises and passes this $3.5 trillion package.
You're all demanding that Congress and Biden pass the full scope of this 10-year, $3.5 trillion package. You want the package to reduce emissions by at least 50% by 2030 while advancing justice and creating millions of union jobs. You also say the bill must include a civilian climate corps, which would direct investments in public schools, housing, transit, and clean energy. As you know, Emma, Senator Joe Manchin, a Democrat from West Virginia, has the power, really single-handedly, to take out some of these major climate provisions in the bill. And according to the New York Times, he has almost successfully taken out the clean energy program. So how are you all going to, I mean, obviously you're responding to that by going on a water fast, but what are your plans specifically in reaching out to people like Joe Manchin? I mean, one person has the power to really derail this.
Absolutely. So he has the power to derail this, but we also know that Joe Biden is the president of the United States. He is, by many counts, the most powerful man in the world. And so we're calling on Joe Biden to do really everything in his power. And we know that he's folding to Joe Manchin, and we are targeting Joe Manchin, and there are people in the climate movement and labor movements who are really calling on Joe Manchin to let us pass and to pass this Build Back Better Act in full scope. But we also know that in this moment, Joe Biden does have a lot of power as the President of the United States and as the leader of the Democratic Party.
You are also calling for the end to fossil fuel subsidies, and the International Monetary Fund just came out with a new report that found the fossil fuel industry gets subsidies of $11 a minute, which is a total of $5.9 trillion last year alone.
Absolutely. And that is an insane number, and that is devastating. And also, we know that the reason politicians are not doing all that they need to on climate is because they're bought up by the fossil fuel industry. And so imagining what our world could look like if all of those fossil fuel subsidies went into green energy, and if all those fossil fuel subsidies went into building a renewable and more just and more unionized country so that we could, like, continue to live in this country and so that people in communities across the country who know the problems that they face could be paid, have good union jobs, stopping the climate crisis in their own communities, and doing everything possible to avert the worst, like, nightmare of the climate crisis that could happen. And so really what we're doing is we're using the power that we have as individuals to go on hunger strike, but we're also calling on this entire generation to rise up and imagine, like, our collective power that we have together is the difference in between this nightmare of climate change, this current trajectory that we're going towards, and also this, like, building this beautiful dream of the world that we really want to live in.
Emma, final question for you. I mean, you're so young. You're only 18 years old.
Yeah.
And you're 18, on... Yeah. You just recently turned 18?
I turned 18 the day before we started the
hunger strike. Well, happy belated birthday.
Thank you.
I mean, to go on a water fast, I feel like so many people have become so numb to so much of what's going on right now. Gun violence happens daily, and it doesn't even make the headlines anymore. And, you know, last week, over 600 people were arrested as part of fossil fuels, People versus Fossil Fuels, led by Indigenous people. And it got a little bit of media coverage, but not as much as it deserves. Now, I did speak with the press person who's putting the interviews together, and this morning she said that a number of major outlets are coming to interview all of you. But a water fast is really extreme to do something like this.
Absolutely.
So when you talked with your friends and your family, I mean, how did you come to this decision?
Yeah, it really was the urgency of this moment, and my parents are really worried, and my friends are really worried, and it is a really big deal, and I know that this is definitely going to be the hardest thing that I'm ever going to do in my life, but also the pain, whatever pain and suffering I will go through over the course of this water fast will be nothing in comparison to, like, potentially the fires that could not burn and the hurricanes that won't hit and the people who won't starve and the droughts that won't happen if we pass this bill. So it's really like we need to do everything in our power and do the biggest action and the most high sacrifice action possible and really step up in this moment when Joe Biden isn't and when the government is folding to fossil fuel interests that we as young people are forced to do to really step up in this moment to fight for the future without fires and the future without hurricanes that is worth putting everything on the line for.
And I also just want to read from a few of the bios of the other young people who are striking with you. Kid who's from Dallas, Texas says, I'm fighting for my mom, who's an in-home caregiver, the people in Texas who died during the Texas freeze, and my future children. Paul, 24, from Chicago, says, on warm summer nights, I love to bike along Lake Michigan, looking at the bright Chicago lights. I'm going on hunger strike because I want to live a full, beautiful life. Julia, 24, from Dallas, Texas. I'm hunger striking for my Tejano community. My community has to rely on itself because the government will not fight for us. I will fight for my people. Abby, 20, from Philadelphia. I want to keep living in West Philly. I want to have a home here one day with my mom, my wife, and my kids. I want to have a garden and go to church every week. I'm hunger striking because that future means everything to me, and I'll risk everything I have to make it real. Emma, how long are you all planning to stay on this water fast?
Yeah, I'm really committed to staying on this water fast until the bill passes. And that's a really long time, and it could be a really long time. But I'm committed to staying on this water fast for as long as it takes. And this summer, for this same bill, I marched hundreds of miles to demand the Civilian Climate Corps and the first pieces of the Green New Deal. And yeah, I'm really willing to go as long as it takes until the doctor says, that I have to stop because I'm at like very severe risk of like organ failure, and it's very, very dangerous to my health.
Wow. So, yeah. So I assume that you all have a doctor who's going to be taking your vitals on a regular basis and checking in on you.
Yeah, we do.
Emma, I want to ask you one more question about California, because California Governor Gavin Newsom just enacted a statewide drought emergency, and I just got a breaking news alert from the Chronicle that Newsom is moving to ban oil drilling near homes and schools. But we've done so many shows, Emma, about how climate legislation in California dies because a handful of Democrats are so closely connected to the oil and gas industry, and so that these bills never make it to a vote.
Absolutely. And that's devastating that these climate bills in the state of California, which we think of as a progressive state, that climate bills die. And that's why we're actually, friends of mine in the climate movement, are launching a campaign to take fossil fuel money, to get fossil fuel money out of the California state government. And we know that in order to pass the climate legislation necessary to meet the scale of the crisis, we need to get fossil fuel money out of our politics. And so that's why in California there's currently a campaign to get rid of fossil fuel money and make politicians sign a pledge saying that they will not take any more fossil fuel money or police money.
Well, Emma, thank you so much for joining us, and we would love to check in with you in the coming days.
I would love that. Thank you so much for talking.
Thank you so much. That is Emma Govia, an 18-year-old climate activist from Santa Rosa, California. She says she's going on hunger strike because she's terrified of what the climate is doing and will do to the people and places she loves. She and four other young climate activists are currently on a hunger strike in front of the White House. This just started yesterday, and we will be sure to check in with them in the coming days. Now we are going to celebrate the return of the arts to the San Francisco Bay Area. Since 2003, the San Francisco International Arts Festival has presented and produced performances by over 400 art ensembles from the Bay Area and over 57 countries. We are so glad that they are back this year with virtual and in-person performances at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. This weekend will feature over 30 dance, theater, and music ensembles and companies and more than two dozen separate concerts. Some of this weekend's highlights include Shell and Friends, led by one of today's guests, composer and singer Michelle Jacques, and the debut of the all-women hip-hop crew Mixed Ingredients Dance Company, led by co-directors Shinobi Jax and Samara Atkins. Joining us now are Andrew Wood, executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival, Michelle Jacques, artistic director and founder of the Shell and Friends New Orleans Band. They will be performing at the closing concert this Sunday at 6 p.m. at Eucalyptus Grove, and Samara Atkins, co-founder and co-artistic director of Mixed Ingredients, a multi-ethnic, multi-genre dance collective composed of female-identifying artists who work together with the intent to contribute to social change. They'll be performing on Saturday at 2 p.m. at Parade Ground, and you can find information at yourcallradio.org. Andrew, Michelle, and Samara, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks very much for having us.
Well, Good morning, and thank you for your patience. We just connected with one of these young climate strikers this morning, and I just have to ask all of you, I mean, to think that young people are going on a water fast in front of the White House, and the New York City cab drivers are also on a hunger strike. Michelle, as an artist, I mean, there's so much going on politically. What are your thoughts about that and how it connects to your role as an artist?
Fantastic to me. I remember when I was younger and we were doing fasting. I remember Cesar Chavez. I got to meet him. He was in the middle of a fast. I think what they're doing is very, very powerful and very necessary, because the children are our future. What can I say?
Mm-hmm. What about you, Samara? Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts about this moment we're in right now and how that affects your role as an artist?
I agree with Michelle wholeheartedly, and I think as artists, we create art that reflects the times, and we always respond to what's happening around us, and mm-hmm. we like to make an impact with our artistry. So, of course, if we have something to say with the things that are going on in society, we utilize our artistry to do so. So I applaud these young people for speaking up and speaking out in whatever art form that they choose. And this is going to make people pay attention. And that's what we do as artists. We mm-hmm. bring right. light to things.
And what would you add to that, Andrew? I mean, you bring together so many incredible artists. Luckily, you're back in person this year, but so many incredible artists who really work for social change.
Yes. What we do is we kind of set a broad palette that then artists sort of fill in the individual pictures that go within that palette. So you know, our general, the thing that we're moving towards at the present moment in time, and it's not just this year, it's over multiple years, is it's in diaspora ID for the new majority. So it's we're looking at the shifting demographics of the United States and what a new majority would look like and how it could be transcendent and pivotal. Mm-hmm. And all of the things that are that the environment or equity or a whole range of other things are all fit within that. And what we try to do is provide a platform where individual artist voices can be heard and can be seen. And however they manifest themselves.
Andrew, what has it been like to reconvene with artists, performers, and dancers from all over the world as most of last year was virtual?
Well, there's two parts to that. So we were out last year. We were the first legally allowed permitted performing arts events to happen in San Francisco in October of 2020. So we'd always try to advocate for the arts being live and in person. The visa situation, and not just the visa, but the COVID visa situation, is such that the only international participation that we have is via Zoom with artists, with one director from St. Petersburg, Russia, directing local actors outdoors. And then the third part of it is that talking about moving quickly, since we've announced the program being at Fort Mason, with the current deluge, we've just moved it all indoors. So Michelle and Samara are now performing at the Brady Street Dance Center on Saturday and Sunday. Their times are still the same, but the venue is different and inside. And nearly all of the shows that we had scheduled at Fort Mason in the meadow there are now going to be at different venues around the city.
And Andrew, I'm sure some people are just wondering about COVID requirements. Can you just tell us what will be required of attendees?
Everybody has to be vaccinated. Everybody has to be masked. Right. Under 12s must have a negative test within 72 hours.
Great.
And yeah, we're still very strict about that. And you know, we wanted to be outdoors because we thought more people would be comfortable outdoors. It's just that last year we were kind of battling the city. This year, the forces arrayed against us are far more powerful and pervasive. So we just have to go indoors. So it's either going indoors or cancelled. And I realize that means some people may be less willing to come to the shows. But I think what we're trying to do is find everybody at their level. You know, we're non-judgmental about it. Some people feel confident re-emerging. And some people still feel nervous. We are still planning to live stream most things for those who want to stay at home. But I think what we're trying to say to people is that, you know, everybody has to find their own space and how they feel like they want to re-engage with the world in person. And we're just, again, as we're a broad palette for facilitating artists, we're also hoping to be a broad palette for facilitating audiences as well.
Well, that's great. And you can find ticket information at yourcallradio.org. That is Andrew Wood, Executive Director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. Michelle Jacques is Artistic Director and founder of the Shell and Friends New Orleans Band. And Michelle, I was watching some of the videos last night of you and your band, and I love your music.
Thank you.
The energy is so amazing. And I just wonder, I'm a huge live performance person, you know, doing this job every day, and that kind of helps me stay balanced. And I just wonder mm-hmm. what it's been like for you the last year, given that, you know, live music, you feed off the energy of the crowd, and you all haven't been able to do that for so long.
Yeah, it was crazy. We were able to do two online concerts. And one was at Piedmont Piano, and you have to pretend that there's a live audience in there watching you. So, and we're good at pretending that kind of stuff. So we just fed into what we know what it would be like if everybody was sitting in that room at that moment. Yeah. But it was difficult. It was very difficult because, you know, we're all hams and we love to be in front of an audience and we love the energy of the people that they give us, as you saw in that video. It's really important for us now, thanks to Andrew, to be able to do this.
Well, and I also was reading about your background, and you mm-hmm. toured around the world with an a cappella group called Street Sounds for about 15 years, which must have been an amazing experience.
It was.
And then you decided to do your own thing, and you really wanted to focus on where you come from, Louisiana and New Orleans, and really delve into the history of the music, the culture, and the people. So tell us more about that.
Well, when Street Sounds folded, our director went back to Sweet Honey and the Rock. And I was like, what am I going to do? And I decided to, after doing a couple of shows on my own, to put together an ensemble. And I said, what I really want to focus on is my music and my history. So at that time, I started creating this band and teaching children and doing stuff at Yerba Buena Gardens about the history of New Orleans music and doing second line with kids. And it was really important to me because nobody talks about our stuff, especially the music of the women of New Orleans and their contributions to what the music is. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at my my repertoire, and I surprised myself how many women composers and artisans that I already have included in my repertoire because I just love what we do. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, it's really important. And then to keep the thoughts of New Orleans and Louisiana and the South in the hearts and minds of people because of the devastation that we've gone through twice between Katrina and Irma. I mean, it's been crazy. So this is why I do what I do. And another thing that I'm involved in is the language of the Kuriviní of the Creole people, which I'm Creole, and keeping that going. So I myself have started taking lessons in Kuriviní, and I'm going to be sharing all of this information through my shows, through my workshops, through my residencies.
And you'll be previewing a work in progress, the upcoming project titled Daughters of the Delta?
Yes. This song is called Salongadu, and I really love it. It's a song I've been performing on and off, but we've revamped the whole thing. It's a nursery song for kids. It's a song, Kute Tifi Laye, which means, where did my little girl gone? Mm-hmm. And it's about children that were stolen from their families and sold off into different forms of slavery. So we're really going to really emphasize that song at the concert, as well as everything else. We're doing songs by Charmaine Neville. Nobody knew that Charmaine was an incredible writer. And, you know, Irma Thomas, naturally, nobody knew that Irma lived in Oakland. She used to work at Montgomery Ward's. So we're performing her stuff. So yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
Michelle Jacques is artistic director and founder of Shell and Friends New Orleans Band, and they will be performing at the closing concert of the San Francisco International Arts Festival this mm-hmm. Sunday, October 24th at 6 p.m. And you can find information at yourcallradio.org. It's at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. We're also joined today by Samara Atkins, co-founder and co-artistic director of Mixed Ingredients, a multi-ethnic, multi-genre dance collective composed of female identifying artists who work together with the intent to contribute to social change. I also watched one of your videos, Samara, and I have missed modern dance so much. And I love what you're all doing. What has it been like for you and your company not to be able to perform under COVID?
Well, as you know, dancers feed off of their audiences as well. And the way that we respond really comes from the energy of our patrons and our audience. So it's been really tough being in isolation and not being able to perform in public for people and really sharing our message. But a lot of what we're going to be showcasing in our performance is around like the layers of uncertainty that we've all experienced in isolation. And then what it takes to be resilient and push through and still create art and be inspired. So we're really looking forward to showcasing that for the first time. This is our first public debut since the pandemic. And we're really excited to be the first street dance company represented on the San Francisco International Arts platform.
So tell us more about emerging in a space of resistance. In the materials, it says this one-hour show will take you on a journey using hip-hop, street dance, and underground styles of dance, telling stories that we as humans can relate to and resonate with.
Yes, like the show is called Emerging in a Space of Resilience. And so we are exploring exactly like what we've all been through in isolation, being separated, not being able to dance in community together or be at rehearsal together, which is an experience that is super uplifting and supportive to all of us, especially being in a male-dominated realm that street dance is. And so being an all-female identified company really gives us the support system, like Michelle was saying, just being in a room of women and creating together without all the layers of the outside world really allows us to explore the inner depths of our artistry. And then a lot of what we speak to is what's going on in the world as well. So we just wanted to explore and show people like what it looks like to be isolated when all we do is teach people and connect with people every day, all day. And we wanted to show people what that looks like and then how to get over the obstacles of being uninspired and not having the connection of the community to create. And so we're going to be exploring that on stage, as well as showing folks like what resilience looks like, what pushing through and making it through looks like. So we're really excited about that.
Well, your company looks absolutely amazing. I mean, the rhythms and the moves are just incredible. And I hope listeners can see Mixed Ingredients. Samara Atkins is co-founder and co-artistic director of Mixed Ingredients. They'll be performing this Saturday, October 23rd at 2 p.m. at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco as part of this year's San Francisco International Arts Festival. You know, Andrew, I hope that people and decision makers who determine how much money is out there funding the arts, how the arts really is so crucial to our society. I think that because we were on lockdown and we couldn't go to these performances, it made us, I know it made me and so many others that I know, just appreciate the arts more and miss it so much. What are your thoughts around that?
Well, it's nice to be loved, I suppose. there was a void in a lot of people's lives. Some people have church, some people have other things, but some people, for them, performance is a vastly important thing. For the artists, obviously, you know, the way they communicate with the world, the way they express themselves is through their work on stage or on canvas. And so for them, it was an incredibly tough and trying time. Some artists did figure out how to make their craft work online. And Michelle, as she was saying, she was doing online gigs as well. I think after a while, people started realizing, well, not even after a while, initially people said, okay, this is Zoom. We can do this for now. But really after a period of months and then years, people are desperate. Well, I don't like to say desperate, but people really want to connect again, right, in social environments. And I think, you know, we're not a political organization. We're an artistic organization. We have political overtones, and we have a political mission. But the arts, you convene in happiness, in love, in camaraderie, in all kinds of things, in all kinds of ways. And that's the brilliance of the artists, is that they're not giving party political speeches. They're creating wonder out of the corner of your eye. You know, and you see things, you see the world differently in ways that you never expected. And I think it's the the communion with other people. It's just the richness of the work that is on the stage, but also just the unexpectedness of it. A lot of the time is that you don't know what you're going to get when you go to a live performing arts event, because each one is different.
Right.
And that's what people want, because in the end, it's like the bad joke where you had to be there. Well, it really is, you had to be there in order to experience some of these things. You can't just tell people the following day and be able to convey the experience that you had at that moment. And that's the electricity that happens between the artist on stage and the audience members all in there together, experiencing the same thing in real time, in person. And that's the experience that the arts bring. And that's if there's any politicians or funders listening, that's why we're important, because it's that unique experience that cannot be duplicated, replicated ever again, mm-hmm. other than the people that were in the room with that artist that night then. And that's right. What we hope to have this weekend is these moments with all these different artists.
Michelle, what would you add?
Oh, the collaboration between artists, which is what I love to do. And tomorrow, I can't wait to see your ensemble. This, to be able to share our music, to meet other artists, to share together with people, see how we all work together. That's what's wrong with our world right now. We don't know how to work together. And to be able to show that it can be done, that people can work together, that people can share love and enlightenment together. And this is what's going to be really exciting about this weekend. We've got Samara that's going to tear it up, and we got Michelle and Friends who's going to really throw down.
That's right.
And I know I'm going to see Andrew out there dancing, so. That's it.
Samara, what would you add?
I would add, well, I'm really excited to see Michelle's show as well, because I have a friend in your company, Brian Dyer. So I know you're going to keep the people moving, but
I'm sorry to hear that.
But I really am excited for folks to, really emerge. Like we are all emerging from a space right now that, had us all closed off, and we are all reemerging together. And I think what's exciting about being able to witness so many artists in this space is that people are going to feel connected again. They're going to feel joy. They're going to be able to relate and resonate with what these artists are bringing. And I think this is a part of the reemergence a plan. Like, this is how we do it, by connecting with each other, listening to good music, watching amazing performances, and being inspired. So I'm really looking forward to it, and I'm so excited to be a part of it all.
Well, thank you all. Oh, go ahead.
Thank you. I just want to say that I love the word emerge, mm-hmm. because we've been in a cocoon all this time, and just like a bright butterfly, we get to just come out now and show the world. I'd love that, Samara.
Oh, that is so beautiful. Well, thank you all so much for what you bring to the world, and thank you for joining us. And we hope that all of you can spread the word about the San Francisco International Arts Festival. It's going to be taking place this weekend at the Fort Mason Center in San Francisco. You can find more information at yourcallradio.org. Andrew Wood is executive director of the San Francisco International Arts Festival. Michelle Jacques is artistic director and founder of the Shell and Friends New Orleans Band. They'll be performing Sunday at 6 p.m. Samara Atkins is co-founder and co-artistic director of Mixed Ingredients, a multi-ethnic, multi-genre dance collective composed of female-identifying artists, and they'll be performing Saturday at 2 p.m. Andrew, Michelle, and Samara, thank you so much for... This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Now we are going to continue our celebration of the arts returning to the San Francisco Bay Area by talking about Soulskin Dance. Soulskin Dance is a San Francisco-based dance company devoted to investigating the political and social influences that shape our society. They will be performing Closer Season 8 in person and via live stream on November 5th and 6th at Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. We have had Dance Mission Theater's Chrissy Kiefer on the show so many times, and they have incredible incredible performances. So I hope you can really peruse that website. Joining us now are three guests. Adriana Thompson is Artistic Director of Soulskin Dance. She's worked with many dancers and companies and was a guest faculty member of the Alonzo King Lines Ballet for 10 years. Hi, Adriana. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. Thank you so much. We're also joined by Barbara Koch, a dancer with Soulskin Dance. Barbara has worked with companies abroad and in the U.S. Hi, Barbara. Did I get the pronunciation of your last name right?
Yeah, you did.
Okay, great. Thank you. Thank you for joining us. And Robert Valdez is a dancer with Soulskin Dance. Robert trained at the San Francisco Academy of Ballet and the San Francisco School of the Arts. Hi, Robert. Thank you so much for joining us.
Hi.
Well, thank you all for joining us. So many of us, those of us who are huge dance fans, have really missed you. It has been so hard not to see dance under COVID. And I just wonder what this experience has really been like for all of you. Adriana, do you want to start? What has it been like?
Well, you know, I'm an educator in this work called Gyrotonic. And I work with a lot of dancers, international dancers. I created a program specifically for dancers in Gyrotonic with my colleague, Marion Barboza, who was a former dancer with the Martha Graham Company. And so I did a lot of Zoom. And I felt like as an artist, it was really important for me to continue creating even while we were at home. So I actually decided to do a dance film over 9 months ago. And so Closer is a part of that birthing process, what we all created as a dance company. And I have dancers from everywhere, literally. So we had one of our dancers, a buddy, actually, was in New York, and he was Zooming into our rehearsal process. So for me, I'm also a producer for the Aspen Fringe Festival. I'm programming director there for dance in Aspen, Colorado. And I feel like as a producer, art is incredibly important for our society, and as globally. So we all had to get very, very creative during this time to continue doing our art so we wouldn't be incredibly depressed and finding a way to get back. So it was, to be honest with you, it was definitely a struggle to rehearse with everybody because everybody was coming either from different places on Zoom or in the studios where we were admitted in the studio. And then the next day it'd be like, I'm so sorry, Adriana, you're going to have to leave. The mandate's back and nobody, you know, so there was a lot of obstacles, but through those obstacles, there's creation. And then through creation, there's manifestation. And you just have to be positive that we are going to come back, and we are back. But, you know, we also know the reality that we're not fully back 100%, but we're finding a way to come back to our audiences again. And especially for dance, it's incredibly important. Art, period, not just dance. But it's important for us as people to be a part of a community and a sense of sharing and acknowledging and witnessing. So that's been my experience, and Closer is kind of what came out of that. Right now I'm creating a new piece called Awakening, which is a live performance with five of my incredible dance artists.
Well, and again, you can see Closer November 5th and 6th at Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. That is Adriana Thompson, Artistic Director of Soulskin Dance. Barbara Koch is a dancer with Soulskin Dance. Barbara, I think what's amazing about dance, I mean, of course, all of the arts are just so important. But with dance, it's just to see what the human body is capable of and just to watch the movement. And that's what I've always loved about dance. So what has COVID been like for you not to be able to share that with an audience?
Well, I think in the beginning of COVID, for me, we didn't know what was going to happen. None of us did. And I was actually in Joshua Tree. I have a house out there, and it was the first time that I got to stop and actually focus on actually just myself and my spirit and my, I don't know, I got to do things that I hadn't, I got to take walks in the rocks. I got to do things that I wasn't normally allowed the space to do. So, and then Adriana contacted all of us, and it was actually a really beautiful period because we all got to create. And, you know, for me, I was in an environment where I was outside jumping around, dancing. I was doing ballet class and, you know, bar in my laundry room. I was doing yoga and, you know, but, you know, not to be able to perform and do what I love, I think it was difficult, but we were also, Audie kept us in a process. She was great. She held the space for us to keep our process going as dancers. And, you know, so she did that first little project. And it was great because, you know, Jamie Lynn was on her roof on Gough Street and I was in the rocks in Joshua Tree. And, you know, Andrea was, you know, in Marin and Adriana's garden dancing, and Allie was in Salt Lake City, you know, behind her parents' house. And, you know, it was a beautiful experience to see all of us creating this montage of, you know, shelter in place. And then, you know, we kind of got the go ahead to be able to go in the studio. And that was actually, I don't know, I think we were all kind of in tears. We were all kind of just flabbergasted that we could actually go in the studio and dance. And there were five of us and we were super far apart and no touching and not being able to breathe. And then we learned which masks worked. And now it's just normal to dance with the mask on. But, you know, I think it's, everyone's had their own process. And, you know, I've been fortunate enough to actually, you know, be working with Soulskin because Adriana has held the space for us to continue to create, you know, our first shelter in place project. Then we had three rehearsal periods. So I've actually continued as a dancer to be in that place. And I'm super excited to actually get back to the stage again. But it's, you know, it's been, everybody's had their own process with it, but Soulskin has helped me, you know, be able to continue to thrive. So that's my experience as a dancer.
And that is Barbara Koch, a dancer with Soulskin Dance, and they'll be performing on November 5th and 6th at Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. They'll be in person and via live stream. We're also joined by Robert Valdez, another dancer with Soulskin Dance. And Robert, you had a really interesting experience under COVID. You danced and taught classes in your small New York City studio apartment, and you also went back to school, I understand.
Yes, that's correct. So I'm a San Francisco native, but I have lived in New York City for the past, I think, 17, 18 years. And of course, like most people in New York, have a small studio apartment. And, you know, as necessity dictated, I had to adapt. So I started teaching dance classes online. I'm also a Guild certified Feldenkrais practitioner, so I was also giving classes that way. And, you know, in the first 6 months, I thought, let's wait it out. Let's see if this turns, like, what's going to happen. And after 6 months, I was getting very restless myself, partially because I wasn't able to really dance myself in the ways that I wanted to, at the capacity that I wanted to. So, you know, being academically inclined, my whole life, I basically was like, well, I could go back to school and study some other things. I know that I have many other interests outside of dance. And all of those other interests, of course, inform who I am as an artist. So one of the things that I'm interested in is the medical profession, and particularly alternative methods of healing and helping people, Feldenkrais being one of those, but also ultimately perhaps Chinese medicine. So I started investigating what I would need to do eventually to be able to take that on. And there was a whole bunch of courses that my BFA did not prepare me for, a lot of the hard sciences. So I went back to a local college in New York, did all my classes online, and really engaged in that way, and just became more curious about life around me, understanding the pandemic a bit better from more of a physiological point of view. And I definitely think it's changed. Now that I'm back in the studio, very happy to be back, to be dancing. But like, you know, we're not tabula rasa. We take everything with us. And so now I come back with this greater sense of understanding, but also wonder. And yeah, it's been a really cool process.
I imagine, and I'm sure it's giving you a newfound respect for the human body.
Absolutely. Not just from an experiential, but also now more from that science-based.
Right. Yeah, that is so interesting. And I hope we have time, because so many people have not moved as much as they usually do because of COVID. And so I'd love to ask you about Feldenkrais and then Gyrotonic, because I've been wanting to take a class, and it'd be interesting just for you to just briefly let listeners know, especially for those who really feel the need to kind of move their bodies more, because that's so important. But if we have time, I'll ask you about that. But I want to make sure we spend a little bit of time talking about Closer. So this performance, again, will be at the Dance Mission Theater, November 5th and 6th. And Adriana, in the yes. materials for Closer, you say that never before has misinformation and politics so blatantly threatened the lives of hundreds of millions of people. And this divide only worsened with George Floyd's murder and its stark exposure of racial injustice in the United States. Closer reveals our need for human connection and the diversity and the inclusion that is essential in a true democracy. So tell us more about that.
You know, I feel like our country has become so incredibly divided. And if you look at, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen my work before, but I do. Yes, I'm a modern choreographer. Some people call me contemporary. Some people call me contemporary ballet, contemporary jazz. I'm a choreographer. And I grew up in San Francisco. I'm Sicilian, Italian, and Scottish. And my family is second generation. So, like, to be an American, my great-grandparents came here for a better life. And they were immigrants. And so, you know, the ideology of America is that it's this melting pot, it's a freedom, it's all these, you know, rights, everybody's, you know, supporting each other. And that's not what's happened, you know, and we play with this in history all the time in America. It's still a very new country. Because I, as a professional dancer in New York, I toured a lot internationally and I saw a lot of different things. That's what was so great being an artist. I could see the world. But in this period of time, it's been really hard to be proud. And I love my country, but it's becoming so divided. And to me, art is a medium of how to speak your truth. Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's what's left, right? And audiences, because I'm a producer, are slowly dying, and I feel a responsibility to keep holding space for all these really amazing artists, including myself, that has a story to say. And as a choreographer, I'm very much interested in the individual and where all of my artists come from and their backgrounds and what they can give in the studio. So, yes, words are important, but actions are stronger, right? Mm-hmm. So in those words, the way I'm looking at it is, how did we get here, right? Why are we so divided, you know? And as artists, we still also want the people to come back and watch and witness. So what's our responsibility as artists? And I think it's to tell a story and to have people look and reflect. That's what art is to me. So it's very convoluted, but it's not, you know what I mean? It's not simple.
Right. Well, and in our remaining minute, I'm looking at the promo right now, and I just love, it's like 8 to 10 people on stage at the same time. Beautiful dancing. Can you just give listeners a preview of what they can expect? We have about a minute left.
Buddy, you wanna tell them what they'll expect? Oh, she gone?
No, I think just the screen changed. So you'll hear Adriana sometimes refer, you know, this is Robert, as Buddy, because that's my nickname. So people call me that all the time. Same person. So in Awakening, the new creation, the thing that will be performed live, it's this super fun celebratory piece to disco music that's being mixed live.
Mixed
right?
live with DJ Camille Conrado.
And it's for me, it was a breath of fresh air because unlike, you know, Closer, which was the film project we did that had a bit more of a somber feel, this is much more celebratory, and I feel like it was a nice change. And so you'll see on stage that exuberance, that extraness, that fun, yeah.
And coming back to life.
Yeah.
Coming back. And Closer is a beautiful film. It's actually 34 minutes. It's absolutely beautiful. But it has a... And Jaco Sturdum is the film designer in this project. But Awakening also has a message, which is... We're all gonna make it. We're gonna be okay. We're gonna just got to keep going. You know, you can't give up.
Well, unfortunately, we are out of time. But I just want to thank you all so much, and I'm so glad you're going to be performing in person. You can see Closer on November 5th and 6th at Dance Mission Theater in San Francisco. Adriana Thompson is artistic director of Soulskin Dance. Barbara Koch and Robert Valdez are both dancers with Soulskin Dance. Thank you all so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's your call.